Welcome to the Immeasurable Podcast at the Krishnamurti Center in Ojai, California. This series reflects upon Krishnamurti's work and how it directly impacts the listener. The invitation is to inquire together into the fundamental nature of our existence.
This is the third small group discussion with Jay Krishnamurti in Malibu, California, 1970.
Can we talk about violence?
All right, so if you want to talk about it. The superficial violence or the deep-rooted violence in man.
Oh.
What do you mean by that word, violence? Would you say any form of resistance is violence? Any form of conformity is a violence. Or any form of discipline in the sense of imitation, imitating a pattern, a violence. Which means really, control, any form of control is violence. No? I mean, merely throwing a brick at a bank or that's one form of violence, killing another, anger, and so on, which we recognize very easily as violence. But there are other really much more vital and deeper layers of violence, of which most of us are unconscious. At what level do you want to discuss this?
So, sir, does this mean that if I control myself so as not to eat meat, that's a violent act, for example?
No, I said, sir, any form of control is violence. But don't merely immediately take an example. Let's examine it. It may not be true, it is, but let's go into it, sir. To control or not to control what would you say? What would you consider violence? Hate is violence, one. But these are all very, very superficial forms of violence, aren't they?
If you look at violence as something that tears you apart, anything that tears you apart.
Like if you control something else, you control something else, and then the division.
No, but look at it, sir. That's what our whole culture is based on. That. Controlling, resisting, suppressing, imitating, conforming, adjusting. Would you call all that violence? What is the need to control? I get angry and I say I must control. Why?
Well, in that case, one might fear harming someone else.
Go into it a little more.
One fears lack of control.
You've controlled, haven't you? Would you call that violence? Huh?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's force.
No.
You can feel a pressure when you do that, when you control something. You can feel a tenseness.
It's really quite an extraordinarily complex question, this, you know. Don't just brush it off by take one example, but get to the, if I may suggest, go behind the words.
It's destructive, we feel that.
It seems as if we're talking about both doing violence to our own inner experience and talking about doing violence, damage to someone else or a horse or property.
I don't think I've ever controlled.
Never controlled? What happened?
Wait.
Oh.
And you say you have control. Hmm? Why the two?
Fear.
No, sir, don't just say fear and then go explore it a little bit. Let's explore it, sir. Here is someone says, look, I've lived so many years now and I've really never controlled. About anything. Either it's an outrageous lie, outrageous statement, or it may be true, I want to find out whether a life can be lived without control at all.
Does that mean that you've never experienced anger?
No. The anger is something different. We said, sir, what is violence? We talk about violence. At what level are we talking about violence? The physical violence, the reaction. Anger, hatred, and brutality, all that, all at a level that is not, that is the source of all violence, not only physical but psychological and all the rest of it. Unless we tackle the deep source of it, mere pruning the branch is little meaning. Could we go into this? Would it interest you? Why do you control?
I threat.
Huh?
There seems, because there is a threat. There seems to be a threat to the me. When I want something different from what is,
Would you like to find out how to live without control? Would it interest you? Huh? Let's explore it. Let's see. Some person like here, who is sitting here, says, he is never controlled. Hmm? It sounds appalling. And what does it mean? What is a life without control? Is that ever possible? So we can, I want to find out why I control. First, let's begin with that. Why do I control?
Is it fear, as Jenny said, fear to be threatened?
Is it fear?
Fear. So with fear, a threat to the person.
Is it fear that makes me control? Or the memory of something which is unpleasant and that makes me control? Yes, custom, habit, the educational, and say everything. Now, look into yourself, sir. What makes you control? Don't verbalize it too quickly. Let's find out. What makes one control?
You're conscious of yourself. As apart from other things.
If I'm frightened, I want to get away from it. That makes me controlled, frightened.
One doesn't seem to control if you're not aware of yourself. If you're not self-conscious, one doesn't control.
I gave me the power it should be. It seems to me both fear and desire lead to control.
Control means a form of suppression, doesn't it? A form of imitation. A resistance to something. Why? Why don't I flow, live? And that's perhaps what the younger generation want. You know, the kind of live. Let everything happen. And is that justified too? The Victorian, Puritanical, the Brahmanical, the Judaic sanctions, and you know, all those limitations. And one has conformed to all that, and suddenly say, what's the point of it all? And break through. And Now, I wish we could discuss this, really go into it very deeply, but worthwhile, because I think freedom is that. Freedom is a sense of complete denial of control. Complete non-acceptance of pattern. Is that possible in life? I have to live with my wife, or girl, whatever it is, I have to live with somebody. And I have always to adjust myself. I can't tell her or him everything. And therefore, there's a restraint. There is a resistance. It's a form of living a life of a lie. I'm always lying. I don't know. Go on, sir, I'm talking. I don't know.
I find that when I have no resistance against going along with something, if I have no resistance at all, I find I can do that, and I have a certain confidence that I can cope with the consequence.
When you have confidence,
that I can cope with the consequence.
Is that it? Is that having confidence brings about a mind that is free from all resistance? Is that it? Having confidence. Confidence in what?
That whatever happens.
No, sir, see the danger of it.
That's confidence.
Having confidence.
Not in myself.
What can...
Confidence in whatever happens, I will deal with it somehow or other. Go along with it. No resistance.
Sir, I want to try this man. It's in a situation where he is himself. He's just... read all the facts, come out, actually protects nothing, and then finds that somehow he's being manipulated, utilized, so forth. Now, what is that set up? But when that happens, one begins to change, I mean, to behave differently, to protect oneself. Is that control?
So if you are controlling all the time, where is freedom? If you are always resisting, where is the sense of complete, the beauty of it? And our life is nothing, a series of controls, resistance. Is this something new? And so we are rather puzzled.
What puzzles me is you can't ever... It seems impossible to do something different than controlling. I mean, then we react against it. We say, oh, I'll be myself, and you just go but out and...
When you say I'll be myself, what does that mean?
Well, that phrase doesn't have much meaning, but well, it generally means, I suppose,
Perhaps we could ask what we mean by control, sir.
Huh?
Perhaps we could ask what you mean when you say control, sir. What do you mean?
What I mean
because
by control is to resist, hold back.
Oneself or others?
Others, oneself, resist. Hold back. Restrain. I want to smoke and I mustn't. I mustn't overeat. I want to be sexual, I mustn't. You know, must and mustn't. You follow? This battle going on all the time.
I found myself controlling just this very instant, trying to think of what was said 2 minutes ago, trying to hold it, to keep this idea, to follow it, to pursue it.
I understand why I mustn't smoke. If it becomes suddenly clear to me, then I just don't smoke anymore. It's the understanding that does away with the resistance. I know for myself, I stopped smoking, and it was unusual only because there was no resistance. It just stopped.
If I didn't control my children, I would lose my job. There's a finale.
You see, you are now resisting the question, aren't you? Huh? I mean, if someone asks, why do you live this kind of life of constant control? What's the point?
Then there's only control when there is a point.
What's that?
Then there's control when there is a point, when there's a
In that sense, yes, yes.
I must control myself and others in order to make them fit the images I have of how life should be for myself. As long as there's images in my head, there's bound to be control.
So, if I may suggest, let's answer the question immediately. See what is implied in it, sir. Control. Why do one controls at all? Fear. The desire for security. Facing something which I don't know, when I'm used to live a life of a life always in the known, and I control because I want to be certain, clear. There is no contradiction, conflict, and so on. Now, perception of all that, the cause of the reason for control, would that clarify, help us to be free of controlling? Knowing the cause of control, will that free the mind from controls? Will the analysis of why we control help us to be free from control?
Well, if you don't understand at all that you are controlled or why you're controlled, I suppose you wouldn't even begin to be able to cope with it. On the other hand, I suppose that understanding could be superficial, where you could recount analytically, clearly, why you're controlled and never somehow tempt me.
That's what I want to get at, sir.
Aren't we looking at a fragment now?
Yes, one fragment says to the other fragment, I must control you. That's all. One fragment takes the superior position as the analyzer, the sensor, the controller, and suppresses everything else, controls it, or rejects it, or goes beyond it, overcomes it, and so on. One fragment opposed to the other. This is what we call control.
And analyzing is often a means of control.
Yes, analyzing is a means of control. That's right. Now, if one questions all that, if that is to find out a different way of living without this, how would you set about it?
You'd set about it, by, for one thing, by seeing all the time exactly what you were doing. If you're not controlling all the time, then you see you're not controlling. If you are controlling, then you see you're controlling. Or you're aware of it.
Wouldn't you have to experiment a little and see where you resist? Then you would see where the resistance is at. Experiment by going along. Then you would see where you're not.
Sir, would you put it, I want to find out whether I can live in daily life without having any form of control. I want to find out, I want to live it. Not verbally, not just theoretically, but actually I want to live it. Now what am I doing? How do I set about it?
How do I try it?
I would try it. All right. How do I try it? Go on, sir. Let's see. How do I try it?
I would try and go along with whatever life brings me, health, disease, friendship, loss of friendship, and see what my resistances are. Then I would see.
Which means what?
Does it mean there's a separation still?
No, sir. Would I wait for environment or circumstances to bring about this freedom from control?
Well, Well, you don't have to wait. There's environment and circumstance every right now. No waiting.
I want to live a life without control. First of all, I don't know what it means. Because my life is all control and rejection and resistance. Now, how am I to find out? How am I to move, experiment? Experiment being tested out.
It seems like the first thing to do is to start right now.
Yes, start right now. Let's start right now. What am I to do, sir? How am I to find the key to this, the movement of this? You follow what I mean? What am I to do?
Well, every time we do something, it implies we have an idea or a goal. Like, we don't know what it is to not control, but we don't know where to go.
Sir, do it, sir. Now, I'm asking you. Find out how to live without control. Now, do it now. See what is meant by that. Never to have contradiction, which means control. Right? I want smoke, I don't want smoke. That's a very small affair, but I mean, push that right through. That's our way of thinking. I want to go, I don't want to. And all that implies control, resistance. Now, I want to find a way of living which isn't at all there. Because I see a life of that kind will inevitably stop freedom, will inevitably continue, bring about a constant battle with myself, within myself, with another, and so on and on and on. So I want to live a life in which there is no control at all. And would I do then anything I wanted? Then would I want anything? Which means dependence on somebody. Go on, sir, I'm... Push it, let's do it together. I depend on you, wife, husband, society. I depend on you, psychologically, not, you know, obviously, postman and miller, the grocer and so on, that's quite obvious. I depend on you, psychologically. And being dependent, there is a sense of insecurity. That sense of insecurity, I want to ward off, resist, and my dependence grows deeper, more and more and more, and therefore my control of myself more and more and more. So I'm stuck there. So what shall I do?
Sir, to ask, maybe not as a question, but to ask, what it is that I'm depending on you for, what it is that I hope to
sir, gain. All that is going to take time. That'll take me many days. I don't want many days. I don't want to spend my next 40 years saying why. Because that's such an awful waste of time. Whole analysis is a waste of time. Sorry, forgive me.
It seems like time is important in your life.
This is it, sir. Look, control is time.
Yeah. It's like, it seems like it's focused on future time.
There it is, sir. Do watch it. Do watch it.
In a certain sense, we really have a meaning right now for living. In a certain sense.
No, I don't know it. Don't assume anything, sir.
Well, what about my name and what I have right now?
For myself, I want to end control. You follow? Not through analysis, because that doesn't bring it about. It is no meaning. So I said, what am I to do now to be free of control altogether?
To be free of dependence.
That's only one part of it, sir, isn't
one
it?
Part.
I don't want a sensor. Me, the sensor, who is always watching, operating. Do this, don't do that. Justifying, condemning, suppressing, controlling. You follow? I want to kill that animal. Kill, you understand? Get rid of him, put him down the sewer, whatever you like.
Sounds very violent.
What, sir?
Sounds very violent.
It does, but it's quite like that.
May I suggest that, you know, something goes through my mind, that perhaps freedom might involve not only freedom from dependence, but also freedom to depend, to be dependent. That is, so often people feeling unfree are afraid to love someone as a lover or as a friend, because in loving them,
they get entangled, they get frightened, they get jealous, so they say, please, I won't. That's another form of resistance.
Still, if I see things as they are, there's no time for control.
Why don't I see things as they are?
Seems like that happens when I get caught up in how I want things to be. then I lose touch with what they are.
Because the me gets in the way.
So you're giving a lot of explanations, if I may point out, but you're not out of it. You're giving me, to a hungry man, description of what food is. No, give me food, not description. I see clearly in myself the sensor operating. The observer who says, do this, don't do that. Control. Now, I can go on like that for the rest of my life, knowing what the sensor is, the past, the sensor wanting to be secure. respectable or non-respectable, and so on, so on, so on. Now, I really want to find out a way of living in which the sensor doesn't operate at all and yet have complete order. Otherwise, life is disorder. Which it is now. Right? So what? There must be order. You follow, sir? Complete order. Because if there is disorder, then the necessity of a sensor. It is the sensor who has created disorder. So, Bob, I see that very clearly. The danger of a sensor. And also I see the danger that without the sensor, there might be total disorder, doing anything one wants. And the total disorder will inevitably create another kind of sensor. So I'm back again. And also I know how essential it is that there should be order in life. I mean order in the sense, not a blueprint, imitation, conformity, if to a pattern, all that's all silly. So these are the things involved. If, not yet, when there is complete security, would there be the need of a sensor?
I'm not sure I understand complete security.
My question.
Complete security, what is complete security?
does the censor arise because we are not secure psychologically, physically, in everywhere. We are not sane, let's put it that way. So sanity means total security.
Does it?
I'm asking. I say yes. Sanity means total security. Psychologically.
Are you saying that? Are you asking?
I'm saying. I'm still saying the same thing.
What do you mean total security?
What do I mean by total security?
Is there such a thing?
Huh?
Is there such a thing?
I'm going to find out. Because the moment I'm completely saying there is no control. It's the neurotic that controls. Let's go into it. Security. Our brain demands security, doesn't it? Huh? A brain can function efficiently, logically, sanely when it's completely secure.
What do you mean?
Safe. Huh?
Safe psychologically?
Safe psychologically.
Why would a completely sane mind and mind...
What?
If you think in terms of security.
What?
Why would a completely sane mind even think in terms of security?
Because that otherwise insecurity, being insecure, brings all these problems.
Well, isn't there security in a belief? Can the mind be psychologically secure?
Look what happens. The brain, mind wanting security, seeks security in a belief. In neuroticism, in an illusion, in a formula, right? Because it demands security, it's trying to find it in things that have no security.
Well, can it know where to find it?
We're going to find it, sir. Go at it.
But does that demand a spring from an innate, proper demand of the mind or a neurotic demand of the mind?
No, it's a proper demand.
Why is it?
I'll show it in a minute. You will follow it, go into it. You'll find out yourself.
Would you say that a total security would come from a complete lack of concern? A total inner security would come from a total lack of concern about security in relation to the outside world?
No, sir, just look. Why do I seek security in a belief? In an opinion?
Protect me from
the... Look, I do it, don't I? So it indicates the mind wanting security at any price. It seeks security in neurotic states. So the innate demand of the mind, of psychologically I'm told, is to be completely secure.
Sir,
Otherwise, no church would exist for a single minute. Or the nationality, nor the class, nor the system, nor the belief, none of that would exist. If the brain, mind didn't seek all the time security. See, in relationship. Therefore it depends, and in that dependence, though there is pain, there is jealousy, there is anxiety, fear, apprehension, guilt, yet it tries to find in that security. Right, sir?
Isn't that a cause of insecurity? The seeking for security itself is a cause of this.
But therefore, I'm saying the mind demands security.
That means it's insecure.
No, don't go to the opposite. We'll come to that. So how can you provide complete security? Otherwise, all these acts are neurotic acts.
I still don't see that it's necessary to provide complete security. Because the mind demands a lot of things.
The mind demands a lot of silly things. But this is a basic thing.
Sir. If one thing, if you're insecure at the root, then your mind is always at two places at once. It's seeing something and it's also trying to resolve that insecurity. You're looking at something and some relationship's gone wrong, you can't look at it completely. You're still trying to solve the other thing.
Sir, why does the mind demand the security?
Why? Yeah. Otherwise, it can't function. It can't function efficiently, it can't be happy, it can't, you follow, sir? Joy and all, because...
So the demand itself is not a neurotic.
No, it is not a demand, it wants it, it is its...
It's
food.
Sir, isn't the confusion that we have identified security with certain states or conditions or ideas or something? Therefore, our whole notion of security is perverted.
Yes, sir, that's what we're saying. Obviously. So if you are not secure physically, where are you going to get your next meal, where are you not going to see? You would be spending all the time searching for it. So you must have physical security, right? So mind also said, please give me security. I must have it to function. And therefore we go off into all kinds of illusory securities. So you see, the mind seeks security in things that are not secure. Not secure, not safe, not whole.
Can the mind have security if you don't have physical security?
No, sir. It is seeking security and trying to find some place, somewhere where it can be safe. My wife, my house, my property, my God, my nation, my belief, my neurotic states.
Would you say that this security you're talking about is total freedom?
Yes, sir, in a certain sense, yes.
Isn't it true that if your needs are little, you're not as easily threatened and you feel scared, because you're not constantly threatened because your needs are like that?
So it means, doesn't it, really? We live in a world of uncertainty. I'm uncertain of my wife, my job, my gods, my values. Everything is changing, changing, changing. Either accept complete change, movement, and that very movement is security. You.
Can't you move easier?
No, so the basis, the fundamental demand of a mind is to function efficiently, sanely, happily, clearly. You follow, sir? And it will seek through uncertainty, certainty. And so on and on and on.
Does that mean feeling the certainty right within the uncertainty?
So when you are, when you say life is completely uncertain, that gives you a certain security.
Yeah, yeah.
Krishna, are you saying then that total security is total insecurity?
Yes.
Knowing there is no security is the approach?
Is security.
Sir, I'm wondering you all here. I, for one, I'm not hearing questions. Are there any ones that I'm wondering?
So won't you get clearer? I don't know.
Could the mind be changed or something, set up or no?
There's six on the view.
May I then?
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
My wife, I sit next to her.
Security means to be in a state in which there is no choice at all.
Choice is the control that
we're
talking
about. Of course. Choice is the devil. One, sir.
Very simple. Because you say, one says, right, no choice. Then one says, I mean, no choice in order to be psychologically secure. When are you going to draw that thin line between the choice of, for instance, the people whom one will see and the people whom one won't see, the choice of the place where one will be and where one will not be, and the choice of security? These things seem to overlap.
Look, Nade, but does this operate that way? Do you think in those terms of choice and not choice? Mm-hmm. No, then why do you introduce it? Mind. The brain cells themselves demand complete security. That's really very interesting, go into it. And find it, you follow? And therefore it's playing a trick upon itself all the time. One generation it believes in God, next generation it doesn't believe in God. One finds for God the substitute of the state. And so on and on and on and on. Playing tricks upon itself. caught in its environment, and which all indicates a mind that says, I must have security at any price. Otherwise, I can't function. And why doesn't it have that security? Will it have that security if it sees belief, formulas, patterns have no security at all? Which means not depending on it psychologically on anything. Can the mind see that when it is anchored in a belief, in a dependence? I don't know if you're following what I'm saying. I depend on my wife psychologically. I can see why I depend on her, because that need to explain is fairly simple. Now, a mind that is so dependent, will it see the danger of that dependence and see the total insecurity of that dependence? And the very seeing of it is the denying of it. Can the mind do that? Being caught in the trap, to see it is a trap and break.
Not just that dependence, but all dependence.
One will take that.
Then there might be 25 others.
I don't think there will be 25 others. If we...
The job, the children, the bank balance.
No, sir. No, no.
The neighbors.
No, I'm going to say, that comes little later. That's all calculations afterwards.
Why?
No, not after the wife. But I'm saying, once I see very clearly the nature and the structure of dependence in which the mind has taken security and sees the danger of it, sees in that there is no security at all, and therefore is free from dependence and therefore secure in the sense we are talking about, then it will say, what shall I do with my wife? Then follows the action. But before that, we want to know what will happen in action. I don't know.
Yes. No choice doesn't mean no action. And you brought up the word of no choice.
Action starts when
there's
no choice.
Oh, no, sir. I don't quite understand what you mean. Choice. I don't quite understand.
A secure mind makes no choice. No choice. But it acts.
Obviously. A secure mind must act. But the action is not then a means of its own self-destruction, which it is now.
I'm trying to understand no choice. I came here today. I wanted to be here.
And you made it say, I won't do this, I won't do that. Because you wanted to be here, you said, I won't do this, I won't do that, I won't.
Well, there wasn't even a question of not coming.
Therefore, what's the problem?
So it seems like, you know, thinking-wise, there wasn't a choice, but somehow like my organism chose. Like all of me chose to be here rather than to be someplace else.
Did you choose between this and that?
Well,
choice implies this or that.
No thinking wise, but there are many alternatives, many other places I could be.
But not for you.
But not for me. Yeah.
It's just we'll come back to choice a little bit. This is really quite important to see whether the mind can have this absolute sense of security. Therefore, it can never go wrong. Right? Therefore, it has no choice. What shall I do? Because whatever it does is right. Sorry, this sounds dreadful. It's the neurotic mind that is always afraid of action. What is the right thing to do? Tell me what's the right action, right way of thinking, right behavior, right... You follow, sir? Which is all neuroticism. So let's go on. Shall we go on with this? Go on, sir. Because this implies complete freedom, in which there is no control whatsoever. It's the communists who say, "You to be free, you must be disciplined." You know, all that business. Therefore, discipline yourself in order to be free. That's a nonsense. I don't know if you're meeting all this.
I feel a kind of sense of excitement and freedom from what you did today.
No, sir, not excitement. I mean, to have that, to have such a mind that is completely, you follow, secure, protected, safe, sane, healthy, whole. All these words.
Speaking strictly in a psychological sense. You're not speaking in any physical sense where there may be a really strange city in a certain neighborhood where it isn't very safe to go and you may decide not to go. That's
the
choice, but really character. It's not target.
Choice implies a conflict, doesn't it, sir? Hmm? Even there, why should there be conflict? I don't want to go to Los Angeles, that's the end of it. It's not a conflict of choice. I mean, this whole idea of freedom to choose, has no meaning. So let's pursue this, sir. Please go into it. Let's see. How this mind how this mind can be so completely secure, in the sense we are using, not see, because it is insecure, it is violent. Choice is violence. Right? Because none of this can be accepted in the world, but, I mean, this is the truth. See, to such a mind, space becomes tremendously important. No? Space. Space in the mind, to have space. How can a mind that is controlling, how can it ever have space? And therefore it's non-creative. I don't want to go at all.
But it's not free.
Seeking of security, it's always seeking it in fixed or static things. And when it stops seeking it, it sort of goes free form.
That just itself. Is there security per se in itself, or security in things? I don't.
Security per se.
If there is security in something, then I depend on that, you know? And then the whole problem begins again. The mind in itself feeling completely secure. Not in a quality, in a virtue, in a capacity, in work, in action, in some form of social or ideological commitment and so on. You understand this?
The mind is then not caught on these things, and it's moving. There is no choosing.
Now, how do we come up on that such a mind, sir? Because unless this actually takes place in your discussion about there is no bad. Because as we live now, it is disorder, right? Complete disorder. And the student, young generation throwing bricks, spitting on some people and all the rest of it, is the demand for order. Only they don't know what it means. And we are saying here that order is its center. And order means the understanding of disorder. The disorder is this finding security in things that will inevitably bring about disorder. like nationality, class, you follow, you know, all that stuff. So now after explaining this, can the mind say, now look at it, this entirely and reject it totally? Not reject it as a choice, but say that's silly, finished.
Isn't seeing it enough, the idea of rejecting it, is that this... I was just wondering if you see that...
Seeing is, if you see it false, you're finished.
I was wondering why the extra thing of rejecting it comes into the discussion.
I'm only using that as just reject, put it away, throw it out. It doesn't exist anymore. See, that gives you tremendous vitality. I don't know. Because we are wasting our vitality, our energy, in these insecure things.
On the line of anything at all.
And therefore we have no energy for this.
If one accepts insecurity and one somehow reaches a state where one doesn't have a choice anymore, could one on a given day look back and say, what I did yesterday or 2 months ago was a mistake? It wasn't right. I ask that because one way that you put it when you said one doesn't have a choice in that state is nothing's right.
Well, that's finished, sir. It's over. I go back to it.
Why regret it?
Sam, I mean, this really extraordinarily tremendous value, this, you follow what we're talking about. Let us get at it.
But it does matter, I presume, very much what I'm going to do.
No.
No?
No. What you're going to do is not doing.
You know, one of the things that led me to suggest that is that you said that one's being in a state where one doesn't have a choice leads to action. And I thought that the action that it led to was important. So that it was important what I do.
It's important what you do. Or rather, the importance is not what you do, but the state from which you are doing. I don't know if I'm... I have found security in belief. And from that I act. America is the greatest, etc. Or my religion, etc. My experience is the only thing that counts. And from that I act. And that leads to disaster. War, you this. So, what is the action of a mind that's completely secure? You're asking. Is that you're asking?
No.
He's saying, is the action important?
Huh? No, no, I'm asking. Sorry, you didn't ask. I'm asking. Sorry, I'm asking.
I take it from what you said that an answer might at least partly consist in saying that an action of one who is completely secure will, it won't too much matter what constitutes the action or what the consequences are, but
no, the action then, sir, is totally in action in the sense of
choice.
I wonder if I would make my, you understand? No. Because my mind, the mind then is being completely secure. Whatever it does is action. Right? And therefore that action is not born out of the sensor. And therefore there is no choice. What he does at the moment is right. And this is too dangerous unless you understand the whole of this.
Because if one makes a choice and says the choice is right, then it's not right.
Then you're wrong.
Whatever the choice, it's never right.
I mean, the whole religious idea, both in Asia and in Europe, and here naturally, is control, discipline, and eventually that. You'll sit next to God. You know, the whole thing of it. And we are here we are saying, aren't we, that that's a form of neuroticism in which the mind has found great security. Which is, it is living in an illusion which gives to it a form of security. But we see it as an illusion. And so I say to myself, am I living in an illusion? I am, as long as I have any opinion, any judgment, any belief, any formula, I am neurotic. Even if I depend on my own experience, I'm neurotic.
I don't understand that.
So what does experience mean? There are two meanings to it. Experience means to test, experiment and test. Experience also means to observe. And in the observation of the event or the thing that is taking place, learning from it is experience. Now, here someone is saying, the mind needs complete security. And by observing the what is, the fact, the evidence, the event, it has learnt a great deal. And it has, and experience is putting what it has learned into test. All that implies experience, doesn't it? I've had an experience. Which has left some knowledge. And according to that knowledge, I'm going to act. Which is putting that knowledge to test. Which means I am acting according to something that's past dead. And therefore I'm seeking security in the past. Which is knowledge. And look, sir, I'm seeking, mind is seeking security in knowledge. And knowledge is the past. So that knowledge is always in conflict with the present.
So I said, no,
I mustn't take security in the past, now I must take security in the present. I'm lost. And security in the present is, I will live as somehow, you follow?
It seems as if what you're talking about is trusting the continuous flow of experiencing.
Not trust, I would, if I may, not, if I may, I wouldn't use those words. Trust. Who is there to trust? Trust in what? And who is there that says, I must trust?
Trust is expectation.
And no, this is really quite extraordinary if you go into this, you see.
Even if he's getting it now, doesn't the experience that you had before somehow get into your awareness of it? You don't have to think about it because you approach it freshly. Isn't it somehow?
No, because, look, sir, an event took place yesterday which has left a memory. That memory is my knowledge of that event. And that knowledge, according to that knowledge, I'm going to act. Or according to that knowledge, I want more of it. Right? And then, see, therefore I'm living in the past. And that is deadly. And therefore I'm living in the past as a means of security. See the beauty of it, sir. How can I drop it?
You're not interested. You had it yesterday.
So can I? Wait, sir. Can the mind, as the event takes place, learn all about it, if I test it out, finish it. Not now finish it then.
Next time you approach yourself.
And no, don't say next time, you miss it. And you're already planning. Which is going to act. Your plan is going to act, not the event is going to act.
Did that experience rise in your awareness?
No. Experience, we said this, sir. Experience implies observation of what is, which is an event, an action, learning from it, which becomes the knowledge. That knowledge, according to that knowledge, we act. See what happens. There is a contradiction between the past and the present. So action is always in the past. or according to the powers. So, not knowing that such action brings disaster, conflict, mind takes security in the powers. Now, if I see that, feel it, understand, see the truth of it, feel it, taste it, smell it, you know.
And you reject it, isn't your mind more
sensitive? It's finished.
But your mind is more sensitive than because you reject it.
No, mind has become sensitive because it has observed, not because it has experienced.
Not because you have observed it. As a result of that experience.
And it is not a result.
You kind of observe that you don't have this.
Therefore, I am observing all the time.
In that observation, are we not getting the confirmation again and again that the whole idea of security is illusion? What aim are reaching for it? Isn't there security? Isn't that? And that is the security? Isn't that we're getting a confirmation as we see this?
Sir, we mean observation, a mind that's awake, observes. And in that there is no say, observation is not say. The mind can then say, in observation there is security. Which is, again, the mind is taking security, protection, safety, in observation, rightly, and so on.
That is the same error?
Of course it is.
Sir, is there a difference between observation and observing and experiencing?
It all depends what you call experience and observation. You can see it's that. Let's look at it. I don't know. We'll find out. What we said, experience is something to be tested. Something that must be tested. And also it means to observe the event, the occurrence, the what is, and learn from that, or accumulate knowledge from that. I realize, I observe the precipice, see how difficult this is. I observe the precipice, the danger of it, the experience of it, which is the testing of it, and I go away from the precipice, right? That's an experience. The whole of it, the seeing of it, the testing of it, the learning the danger of it, which has become my knowledge, and therefore I won't go near a precipice. Therefore I go away from it. All that is experience, right?
I'm playing up against something that I...
See what's happened. Next time I meet a precipice, my conditioning, learning, I said, don't go near, danger. Right? Now, in that, memory of that is secure. Now, in that there is great security. I know. Snakes are dangerous, you follow? Certain animals are dangerous, precipices are dangerous, and so on, so on. Now here, mind is also seeking security. Inexperience, which is knowledge, which is the past. See, I must have physical security of the precipice, and see the dangers of psychological security. You follow, sir? Right? Which means the mind has become so intelligent, it says, I'm there, it must be there, it must not be here. You follow? There's not a contradiction.
very important, and I didn't understand it. Could you try again?
I'll have put it differently, so let's try. So what is intelligence? Let's approach it differently, that's all. What is intelligence? I'm asking, what is intelligence? Is it knowledge?
No, I would...
Is it a refinement of knowledge? The more knowledge, you follow? Or is it a capacity? We don't agree. We'll go into it, just explore it. Is it a capacity? Is it something that you accumulate? Is it something that is cultured bit by bit, bit by bit? If culture grows, or is it a state of mind, a quality of mind that is sensitive to danger or to every form of danger? Right? Not only physical danger, eating the some food which disagrees with you and keep on eating, which is lack of intelligence. And then taking a pill after in order to get rid of that pain, but you follow, keeping that, that's total lack of intelligence. Seeing the danger of a precipice, that is intelligence, the danger of it. Now, the danger of a belief is intelligence, right?
Seeing the danger
of it. So, intelligence says, I must have security. There is danger here, and also there is danger there. Right? So, intelligence is watching. And intelligence observes. In the observation, it experiences. And we mean by experience what we said just now, which is to test it in action. Which is to observe an event or actually what's going on and see what's going on and not let it accumulate as knowledge and therefore in that knowledge take security and act from that knowledge. I mean, a man who acts from that knowledge is not balanced. A man who lives in the past and acts in the present with the past is unbalanced. I don't know if you...
I see in that too, there's no choice. I haven't seen that before, but there's no choice when... Like, what I was trying to understand is like the two experiences, the experience of the precipice and the experience of psychological memory and pleasure and all that.
Which is a danger.
Here it's just action. You just don't do this and you do something else, but there's not a choice.
No,
in it.
No. Have I made so? Yes. So intelligence is the highest form of sensitivity, and that is complete. An intelligent mind is completely protected mind. Right? Right, sir?
is protected in the sense of that we've never seen protection before. There's no barrier there. It's not protected with a fence around.
No.
In summing this security perception, could this be summing of it up to see the fact that there is no security?
So either you see the fact with the past, or you see the fact as it is now. If you look at it with the eyes of the past, then there is choice, repression, control, conflict, depend, all the rest of it follows. To see that one is angry, that there is anger, see what is, how complex that is too. To see it without the word, because the word is of the past. To name that feeling as anger is the conditioned response of the past. So to look at it non-verbally, try it, do it, you will see what extraordinary intelligence, which is its own discipline, involved in that one little thing.
You see it viscerally.
Huh?
You see it viscerally.
Sir, is it time to stop? Because it is time, isn't it?
6:56.
May I just finish this thing, Joe? We live in a certain center. From a certain center, we live, act, think, feel. Right? This center is this center of choice. Right? This center is repression, control, violence, all the rest of it. That is that center. To move away from that center completely to a different space and dimension is what we're trying to do. Right? To move from this to that is not an act of determination. If there is determination, then there is choice. See how difficult, you follow, sir? So, can I see this center? Can the mind see this center for itself without any past interfering with it? Which is to look at it without the whole structure of thought coming into it. Thought is the past, therefore it is the censor. If the mind sees that, you're already... Right, so we'll stop tomorrow at 11.
The Immeasurable Podcast is a project of the Krishnamurti Center, funded by the Krishnamurti Foundation of America. For information on our online community, programs, and how to support this work, please visit kfa.org.